You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss the episodes of TNG and a few tangents along the way. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And with us again...
I'm calling from...
No, go ahead.
No, Start already. I'm calling from Warwickshire in England.
Please listen to this important message from Trekmate Family podcast founder, Wayne Emery, on the untimely death of our beloved friend, Colin Higgins, who sadly took his life.
Hi, Lou. Just wanted to send this over to say just how shocking and sad it is to hear of the news of Colin's passing. I always enjoyed podcasting with Colin. Back in the day, it was a bit of a wild west for podcasts when we all started out. I started back in 2011, and when I started podcasting, we came out in November, and we took great pride in the fact that we felt we thought we was the only Star Trek podcast based in the UK. Turns out someone else also had that exact same thought that month. And it was Colin with Trek News and Views, which kind of made us like friendly rivals. And I enjoyed that friendly rivalry. And I'd gone on to his show a couple of times. He'd come on to ours a couple of times. He'd joined us when I'd done the Trekmate Podathon. And it was always a pleasure to talk to Colin and talk Trek with him. And he was always well-informed, well-spoken, much better behaved than I am, and it's just a shame. It's a shame and sad that you won't be able to do it anymore, and it's shocking. It's shocking, and I just hope that I hope that he's got whatever he was looking for that he couldn't find in life. What you meant to say in situations like this? It's sad when someone feels that they can't go on and that they have no other option other than to take their own life. And I suppose I just want to take a moment to just say thank you to Colin for taking time out of his schedule to be geeky with us and to babble shit about Star Trek. It's, well, let's face it, it's something that we all love doing. And I'm glad that he did. I had the opportunity to do it with him as well.
Colin was slated to join us for this episode called Masks. However, at the last minute, he bowed out, saying he wasn't feeling well. I had no idea Colin was wearing a mask of his own. A mask that shielded me from knowing the pain and anguish he was feeling. Colin took his own life. James and I will talk more about Colin's death in our next podcast, Eye of the Beholder, which deals with the suicide of its own. But for now, please, let's take a moment of silence and think of Colin as you listen to our review of Season 7, Episode, Masks.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels. Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, the next generation, the good, the bad, the ugly, and today's episode, which is Masks. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
James from London, of course. Dr. James Roberts. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. I am actually not doing too badly recently. I've been exhausted at work, but I've managed to... I just feel like the last couple of weeks things have been a little bit less hectic. So, feeling slightly better. Because actually, in complete fairness, had things not got better, I probably would have... I was getting quite close to getting pretty annoyed with my setup. So, anyway, all good. How are you, Luke? Are you refreshed from a recent visit somewhere?
I am. Yeah. The biggest thing, you know, we were going to meet most people. They grounded you.
Weren't allowed to leave the country.
You weren't allowed to leave. You're on the no-fly list. But then again, so is everybody in your area, too.
But it's really frustrating about this, by the way, because I'm almost certain that all of these restrictions are going to get lifted in September. You know, I'm almost certain that in September they'll say, you know, let's go back to normal. It's frustrating that it's in September and not in August, because I could have jumped across. But you think they're going to be in place longer?
Well, considering they said that the Delta variant comes from the UK, I got a feeling people aren't going to want to see you folks for a while. I've got a filter on my headphones because I don't want to get it either. You know, it's difficult.
So you guys are doing okay, though, in terms of... I was actually just clicking on the US for new cases, and I was about to say you guys are doing okay, but actually, no, you guys have had a bit of a... unfortunate resurgence, haven't you, over the last month?
Yes, and the majority of the people that are succumbing to it and dying from it were unvaccinated. The people that just refuse, because obviously it's the government that wants to vaccinate them. And you know what? I don't care. You do what you want to do, but when you die from it, you know, I'll be sad. But you know, you only have yourself to blame. There's absolutely nothing wrong with these vaccines. The only deaths I saw contributed to it were elderly, who also had other things going on at the time. And I think, you know, I've got a family member who believes that she's experiencing tachycardia, another heart arrhythmia, which she's had all her life, and she attributes it to the first vaccine, so she ain't getting the second one. I don't believe that. I think when you have anxieties to begin with, you're going to have anxieties to end with. And I don't think the vaccine did anything except for just, you know, I don't know if you know, but you know, you can make yourself sick. I mean, like if I feel I might be having a heart attack, the more I get concerned about having a heart attack, the more I physiologically change and could possibly have a heart attack. And I don't know if that's what's happening with people or not, but I don't think it's justified.
Well, you can certainly start feeling bad, right? If you're worried about things and you then don't sleep well, and then it just knocks into other things. So yeah, I mean that's certainly the case. Anyway, the place I get to with this is always, let's hope we're closer to the end than to the beginning. that gives me a little bit of comfort on all of this, which is still quite a... it still potentially means that there's a lot of a long road ahead. But anyway, you were talking.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, when you said that we're more at the end than we were at the beginning, didn't Picard say that as well, you know, as he realizes there are many days left behind than there are ahead?
I did not mean it in that context.
But still, it's true, though, you know, and there are less days ahead than there are behind. So what are we going to be worried about for the few days that we have? Not the few days.
Whoa, hang on a second. Hang on. I'm only 40. I would like to hope that there are, you know, let's say as many days. Maybe if we say as many, then we know that there'll be a good... You know, that'll be a good collection.
That's true. Yeah, for you, yeah, you're in good shape. You're good, you know, but 40, yeah, you are a kid.
Hang on, you say, I've actually started my midlife crisis health kick recently. So, specifically with regards to lockdown, it's been so harder than normal to kind of maintain any stable state of mind at home, I found, but I've decided to that I'm headed in that direction. So, yeah, midlife crisis, here I come. I mean, this is assuming I haven't already had my at least first midlife crisis.
Right. Yeah. See, the thing is about my family is no one in my family has lived past the age of 69 except for one uncle who went to 93. So, in a sense, I still have I only have 12 years left if I follow everybody else's footsteps.
Hey, so 93 is okay.
It was.
Aim for the 93, though.
Well, yeah, I'm aiming for it, but just, you know, just because I aim for it doesn't mean I hit the target.
Anyway, where were you last week, Lou? Or last 10 days ago?
I was in Lost Wages. Viva Lost Wages. yeah, you know.
Did you make that up, or is that something that people say?
Oh, that's what they call it, Lost Wages.
Lost Wages. Okay, yes. Good.
Because what you take to Lost Wages, you know, stays there. Went to Las Vegas. I wish you could have been there because, you know, my sister went with me and as I was telling her, I think you and her would have gotten along wonderfully. I mean,
already married, Lou. I'm already married.
No, but you would have liked meeting her. She's a nice person and you are too. I'm not saying setup wise. I just mean you guys would have gotten along really well. Maybe next year.
You went to the convention, right? You managed to pop in for a day or so.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. They were selling their ticket. They had any billion tickets left, so there was no concern about running out. But we went to the restaurant there, the American Grill or something like that at the Rio. And there was a few Starfleet officers sitting at the table down the hill.
Only in Vegas.
Only in Vegas. There were some Galaxy Quest ones, too. And Orville. And I'm like, guys, you just trying to piss us off or what? Anyway, but...
They're allowed. They're allowed, right?
Yeah, I like it. Star Wars, on the other hand. Yeah. I'd have had it out with the Wookiee. But so my sister, she looks over and says, I got to go to the bathroom. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? And sure enough, she goes to the bathroom. She comes back and she stops and talks to them. And I didn't even realize how long it's taken her. And I look up and there she is. I go, oh, crap. Here we go. She comes back. She's got one of these wristbands. She said they had an extra one. And they said, here, you can have it. I'm like, oh, cool. That's cool. So I got in. The only thing that was happening after that point was Jeff Richter. Or is it Jeff Richter? You know, Mr. Dr. Star Trek or something.
What?
Oh, goodness.
What are you talking about? You can't be talking about Larry Nemechek.
Yes, Larry Nemechek. Where did I get Jeff Richter from? Where the hell did I get that from? It's not even I mispronounced his name. I just renamed him totally. Jeff Richter.
Oh, yeah.
I even looked this up, but I have no idea who it is. Well, there's a Jeff Richter or Enron, but, you know, Principal Enron. Anyway, Larry Nemechek. Yes. And I don't know if you've ever talked to him.
I have briefly because I went over to him and he was a couple of years ago. He was producing a whole load of CDs that had they had interviews on that he had done. He had spoken to the cast and the writers and other people like that, and he had compiled them. And I don't go out of my way to kind of collect this kind of stuff, but I always like to help these kind of projects, right? So I went there and I bought a couple of his CDs that I've listened to, and you know they're good. They're it's a nice archive, and in the he's one of the few people that has kept this and collated it. So I had a brief discussion with him at that point, but only very very quickly. But I understand that he's a quite chatty chap.
Oh God, yes. Yeah, he is. We interviewed him for the Lou Trek Show, and I think we may have interviewed him twice, and both of them went the same way. It's all about him. It is about him and how he's able to profit off of Star Trek like he does. It's amazing how he does it. So obviously, the Paramount is in with it, or else they wouldn't allow it to happen. But so I ended up on one of his panels, and it just, I don't know, it's kind of boring. And there was really nothing else going on. The guys were in the, you know, where they sell room, whatever it's called.
The merch room. I mean,
yeah.
Now, I have to say, just to be clear, right? Us in the UK, we don't have the opportunity to really get this kind of stuff, you know, front and center. You know, the ability to get, you know, either you know, photos or uniforms or models or badges or things like that. It's just not stuff that you can really come across quite easily. So I'm sure that after like the fifth time we've been to Vegas, it seems somewhat underwhelming. Yeah. But I do have to say that, you know, if I need to get a uniform, right, I've got no other place to go. If I need to get like a framed photo or a framed piece of art of, you know, New York City, there's no other place to go other than Vegas, at least in the UK.
Well, you should have told me if you wanted a uniform. I would have got you one.
I would be disowned immediately by my family.
Okay, then you really need to get one. Jeez. I don't know. Which would you wear, though? I have a hard time seeing myself in any Star Trek uniform. So which would you wear? Which generation?
Okay.
I know you like TNG the best, right? So yeah, would it just be TNG?
No, but there is a problem with TNG, right? In that the TNG era uniforms, and this does extend to both the original DS9 jumpsuits and also to the, you know, to the latter, you know, First Contact slash latter DS9, is that I don't think that there is they're not particularly, they're hard to wear, right? You have to go all in on the uniform. You have to have the trousers and the top. I know a couple of years ago that they were producing Star Trek 09 t-shirts or, you know, tops. And the good thing about those was that I thought they looked very high quality. They looked nice. They looked modern. And they looked like something you could wear out normally. So, you know, obviously you come across as a slight nerd. But with like a Star Trek 09 top, it was much closer to normal casual wear than anything like from the TNG DS9 era. So I would have always been, I would have been keen to have got a, you know, like a medical / science blue top in that format.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, so which one would you end up going home with?
How do you mean? Sorry, going home with what?
No, I said, which one would you have ended up going home with if you had your choice?
For uniforms?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. So, Star Trek 09, I think. I think 09. That's 09. I think that, or at least I saw a style that they had around at the time when we were in Vegas the first time, which would have been 5 years ago. I'm trying to say, I'm being too clever here. I'm thinking, when was it? But it was 5 years ago. At that point, they had a quite nice set. But actually, I think that a lot of the stuff in the TNG, I think for the TNG stuff to work, it has to be of a higher quality. Because I think it doesn't. I think cheap. The cheaper it is, the less good it looks, especially for if you don't have like the perfect frame, shall we say?
Yeah. I noticed that some of the people had like really cheap TNG uniforms that almost looked like it was plastic in a way, and it didn't have any good quality. Me, I was thinking it would be a difference between Kirk's. Not regular uniform, but the one that has his insignia around his belly. I kind of liked that one. And really? I also like the Wrath of Khan uniforms that they seem to wear. The one you could, I don't know how to describe it. I wish I had a video and I could show you. But, you know, the top right corner, they can unbelt it and half of it flaps open.
I think that's a very good look as well. I think it's a much better look than it's a much more sturdy look, right? And I do think it looks good. But you're probably, you know, that's pretty quite expensive, right? It's it needs to be well tailored and well fitting. But that kind of thing is certainly I think that's a much smarter setup than many of the other uniforms. Hey, and when you said, I have to say, I've said this before, and I was in. So when I took the wife to Vegas a couple of years later, I think that was in 2018, I did flag up the fact that women have a much better choice in terms of Star Trek uniforms than men, because they have the ability to wear everything that men are wearing, and they have the skirts as well. Yeah. And I think that the skirts are in, you know, they're like proper, right? They're like a proper piece of clothing rather than, you know, the pajama like stuff that that us men have to put up with. So I have to say that, you know, I always feel that the best thing that they replicate is the actual, you know, the Uhura skirt and similar. So that's, yeah, that's always a bit of a bummer. I cannot pull off a skirt or a, what do you call them? The skanks?
Yeah.
The ones that men were wearing on TNG.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't work with my legs.
No, it wouldn't work at all. Okay, so anyway, Las Vegas. You know, so I did go the one day. I walked around there. I passed John Billingsley in the hallway, and my sister's with me, and I said, "Hey, John." He goes, "Hello." And she goes, "Who's that?" "Who's that?" I go, "That's Dr. Phlox." She goes, "What? Who? Who is he?" So I explained it. "Why didn't we stop and talk to him?" I'm like, "No, you know, these guys do deserve their privacy. They don't need people stopping them in the hallway." I hear that people even will ride the elevator with them just to find out what floor they're on, what room they are, and then start calling them. I'm like, you know, that is just wrong in many levels. Guy deserves his privacy. No, I'm not going to bother him. But yeah, it was nice passing him. So,
I don't think I've heard him speak. I don't think he was at the convention when I was there. I might be completely wrong, but I don't have that memory.
Yeah.
And was anyone talking? Like, did they have like any of the actors on stage?
They did have some, but I didn't go to them because, like I said, a lot of them are canceled. You know, some of the big ones that I would have liked to have heard were canceled.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, like I told you on chat, I think you did a good thing by getting a refund this year and going back next year. I think it would have been a huge, I don't know what you spent. I don't need to know, but I do know that whatever you spent would have been probably, you might have regretted it with so little turnout and all the cancellations.
Well, I mean, so, you know, the cancellations are almost like that's a function of me having to cancel as well. Right. So, had the circumstance not been the same, it's not like all these people are canceling for the sake of it, that there are clearly problems getting, you know, across borders, if people are filming abroad, if people are filming I even imagine people filming in Canada, they're going to have restrictions on how freely they can move around North America. So hopefully this is just having said that, I probably would have still liked to have gone to one, even if it was like half attended or empty, just because it's been over, you know, over a year and a half since managed to get out to anywhere.
Oh yeah,
anywhere else, and you know, and England's not the warmest place in the world at the moment. So just getting out to Vegas for the sun probably would have been a nice thing.
Mm.
But anyway, look forward to it. You know, it'll come back again. I'm sure it'll come back.
Yeah, it will. It will. Yeah, you're right. So yeah, my best time was the Giordano's pizza. Oh man, we went to. It's across from one of the hotels. I can't remember the name right now. The Flamingo. There it is. The Flamingo. So there's a bunch of different places. Some have closed down, obviously because of COVID. But I got my Giordano's pizza, and man, that was so good. Oh, I enjoyed that. So, But, okay. What else happened? Not really much, I guess. So, I don't know. How about you? What have you been up to lately?
Nothing. Just plodding along as always. Very busy at work, as always. Kids going back to school in 2 weeks' time. So that keeps things busy. Technically, I'm trying to get trying to take some time off, just because I don't know if people do this. Oh, you know, it might not even be something people can relate to if they're not like employed in an office like I am. But I kind of checked my holiday leave calendar thing. And there was I was obviously scheduled to go away to Vegas, which we cancelled, and then there were other things that got cancelled. And then in the end, I look at how much holiday I've taken this year, and it's something like, 4 days or so out of the entire year. And by the way, and this is in a country where you're expected to take 25 days for the year, and we're nearly two-thirds of the way through, and I've only taken a tiny amount. So I need to take a break. Completely getting worn out and a bit run down by things. So just hopefully, just keep my head down, and I plan to take some time off in September just to get my sanity back, to be honest. It's been so busy over the summer.
Okay. Ah, good luck there. I remember hearing that you guys are encouraged to take some good time off. So, okay.
I need time off. That's how I roll.
Absolutely. Yes. It can't all be work and the battle bridge.
All right. Talking about the battle bridge.
Yes. Hey. So we have masks to talk about. So let's delve into this. It's like I say, sometimes you just got to rip the bandage off. It hurts less. So the synopsis for tonight's episode is, while investigating a rogue comet, the cultural archive concealed inside begins taking over both the Enterprise and Data, which I know is hard to do, but it did. This is the 17th episode of Season 7 of Star Trek The Next Generation, first aired on February 21st, 1994. Written by Joe Manosky, directed by Robert Wiemer. And I don't believe there's really any guest stars today. Well, it says one, Ricky DeShawn Collins as Eric. And I don't remember. Eric! That's the
little boy.
Yeah, that's the little boy. Yeah, he tried.
Hasn't he been in TNG before?
Has he? Oh, I don't remember.
I didn't know that it was the kid, but I just remember. Actually, no, it's because Troy mentioned it. Troy mentions it by name.
Yes, he has. Yeah, he's been on Liaisons, Masks, and Firstborn.
Oh, okay. So he's
So he'll be back. So, what do we think about this episode? So it's come down to this, huh, folks? how about you, James?
Yeah, so I really want to inquire about our scale. Is it from 1 to 5, or is there a chance of it going lower than that?
If we do Deep Space Nine, we have to have a 0. Although, I don't know of any Deep Space Nine episodes that could qualify as 0. Wait a second. Yes, I do. 1, 2, count to 4.
Move along home. If Wishes and Forces is pretty bad in the first season as well.
So we'll do a 0 scale for DS9.
Maybe. Now, this one's a bit of a strange one, right? Because, the recollection that I have about this was that it's the funny one with Data / Brent Spiner being all of the weird and wonderful characters. But I always watch this episode, and today I actually, I went through it again and I took notes to know exactly what the plot structure is supposed to be here. I always remember watching this episode and then thinking, so nothing happens. they find a comet, they have this weird side chat, and then it this goes away. And I, you know, sometimes you think, okay, what are you supposed to have learned? What was the threat in this episode? How did we overcome at the challenges placed in front of us? And for this episode, it's a kind of like, well, nothing, nothing really happened. There wasn't really a threat. There's a vague chat. You know, the entire thing gets solved by like a 15-second chat at the end between Picard and Data, right? And then that actually unwinds it. And you think, how's that supposed to work? And then you're also left with a lot of questions, which is, you know, how, why, what, when, and who? And then you just move on to the next episode. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what they were, going for here.
I don't either. I tried to look for the curiosities, like, for instance, you know, when Khan and Ops was replaced with statues, like, who was flying the ship? Was it just sitting there, or was there any, there's no operations officer on duty because the station workstation's been taken over?
There was a bit where they mentioned, 20% of the ship has been transformed. And it's like, well, it's a good thing it was not none of the 20% of the ship that's critical, because why doesn't it? You know, there must be a system that you must have tripped. Like, this thing could have, you know, the warp core could have breached. It was just so weird. And then right at the end, I think there's a bit where Worf mentions that, in less than 2 hours, the entire ship is going to have been transformed. But you don't see that from the outside. You kind of presume all of the crew are still alive, and they haven't been transformed into any of these artifacts. You don't get the impression that anyone else is on the Enterprise in this episode, right? It's almost as if they are, you know, there's no one else there. The transformation is happening, and you would almost expect this to cause a bit of trouble with people's quarters or with the systems, the ship's systems. But none of that's ever mentioned. And it's almost as if this episode would have been better like on the shuttle, when there actually are only two people, rather than on the Enterprise, where there's supposed to be 1,000 or so. Right. It was really weird.
And there was no holodeck to go bad. It would have made the episode more plausible if they were on the holodeck and, you know, the holodeck went bad on them, but it just...
No, actually, so you're right. So this episode is really a case, and we've had this before, which is that, you pick up a signal, the signal is doing something to the holodeck, and something is playing out on the holodeck. And you could have framed it as in, you need to go through this ritual from this culture in order to save Data. Right, it could have been that, and it could have been very confined to the holodeck, and they'll come up with a reason as to why you can't turn off the holodeck, etc., etc. But the fact that they take it out of the holodeck and put it onto the entire entire ship, yet you still have features that you would always prescribe to the holodeck, like Data's continuously shapeshifting. What? Why? How? How does that work? Things keep on appearing. It feels like it almost feels like this story belongs in the holodeck rather than in the real world.
Mm-hmm. I kind of thought it was, in a sense, getting a similarities to Inner Light, only it involved the entire ship instead of just the one person, because it looked like this archive was definitely trying to get the ship to understand what it was and what it was trying to say.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you want to go through the story kind of piece by piece, but at the end of Inner Light, right, what you have at the end of Light is you know, the people come forward and they say, look, we weren't able to save our civilization, and as a result, you know, we want us to kind of be remembered and to live on. And you kind of think, oh, that's a quite nice kind of, you know, quite nice message. These people were doomed eons ago, and all they did was they took up 45 minutes of Picard's time, right? That's all they did. Whereas here, it's more of a, what are these people? What are they? You know, that they're not putting across much of their culture other than the Musaka, slash Korgana transition, which is like, at the end of it, you're supposed to accept that it's been a very basic just switch between, you know, the moon and the star, a moon and the sun. It doesn't really say much about the culture. It doesn't really say at no point did I think, isn't it great that we've managed to learn from this old civilization, these people or this kind of these caricatures that were being implanted in Data's head. So I left knowing very little about the culture and feeling that it was sort of a bit of a waste of time. Like from Data's perspective, it must have felt like a waste of time.
I think you're right. Yeah, because it wasn't, you know, people trying to escape a prison cell. It wasn't like Inner Light where they were trying to teach someone about their society. They were just like doing, you know, stupid stuff, changing the ship like that. It just, I really, you know, as soon as I saw Deanna in her quarters and, hey, what's that? I don't know. Maybe we'll put it there. And then it changes right in front of you. It got stupider from there. And I wrote in my notes, and this is true, this is a really lousy time for me to have ADD. And I do. I actually believe I do. I was never diagnosed, but I do believe I do. I mean, it would certainly explain why I was staring at a girl in the class or staring out the window, you know, when I should have been doing classwork. But this was a terrible episode for my ADD because I just kept putting my head down and just doing other things, looking at my phone. you know, went on Facebook while it's playing. And I'm supposed to be taking notes here. I just got so disinterested. It was Shades of Grey quality. That and, you know, no Voxlane, no Tasha. And I mean, that it was just.
The thing is, it's worse than Shades of Grey. It's worse than Code of Honor because those guys had a, you know, there's a reason why Shades of Grey exists, which is that they didn't have any money, they didn't have any writers, and they had to do something for the 20th episode or whenever it was, 22nd episode of season 2, and they had 2 seasons worth of clips to use, and they did what they had, you know, what they could do. Here we've got, you know, we've got like a hugely successful show in its final year. You would expect, you know, even if you think that the main writers on the show are burnt out, they must be inundated by scripts coming in from writers, and people must be wanting to, you know, really wanting to write for the show. The characters have been well formed and well developed. You know, you can talk to anyone about, you know, Data, Riker, LaForge, Worf, any of them, and you know their background, you know who they are and how to write for them. TNG has been proven to be a competent machine at generating episodes. Now, they don't have to be all 5-star episodes, right? You can go to a slightly mediocre season if the love and attention isn't there. That's fine. But this is like dropping the ball, through the floor and it going down to like the 5th basement or so. I have no idea why they did it this way, because it feels so at odds with the rest of TNG. You know, I like the science behind TNG and I want an explanation as to what this was, and they don't even give you an explanation. They want you to believe that it's enough for Picard and Data to have this chat, and then everything just finishes and you move on, and I don't think it's enough. There have been instances where you have to, about halfway through this episode, that there's a bit where Geordi starts talking about whether he can block the sensor beam or he can do something with the sensor beam, and that's kind of the tech way out of the story. You know, what could you do in order to like, you know, do that? And then Picard kind of goes into I'm going to find out the mythology behind the story we're seeing and see if we can play that out, which is a slightly different way of communicating. And I don't mind them going in that direction. If they went in that direction with Gambits, for example, when they ended up having, you know, that they had the artifact that they had built and they were they had to clear their thoughts of unpleasant thoughts in order not to be killed by it, etc. But at the end of the day, despite them having solved it through kind of, you know, through the archaeological pursuit, it still fundamentally was a sci-fi show. Whereas I kind of like feel that this isn't. You could tell exactly the same story outside of a sci-fi context, and it wouldn't lose anything. And that's not why I want to watch Star Trek in a way. I do want the hard sci-fi there. But anyway,
yeah. You know, you mentioned LaForge. I did like the look on his face when Data asked him the question. You know, what's it like when a person is losing his mind? I mean, I wouldn't want an android to be asking me that question.
Yeah, but actually, I also feel like Data is slightly a regressed Data in this episode. I feel like, you know, they kind of set him up. So the first scene is in the school, right? So for some reason, Data goes to the elementary school.
Yeah.
So I had two questions, which was, why is Troy there? And why is Data there? these guys hanging around school didn't seem to be reasonable. But the point where I don't believe that season 7 Data would be going to the school, and let's say that he does, I don't believe season 7 Data would be making an exact replica of a pad, right? I just don't think that's what he would be doing. And then I also don't think when Troy asks him to, you know, sculpt music, he wouldn't reply with how can I reproduce music in clay. It feels like they're knocking him back a couple of years. We know that Data's started dreaming. We know that he's engaged in his artistic side. I don't think he would question the idea of how can you express music through the art of sculpture. He wouldn't push back against that, I don't think. And we kind of, you know, that and then the and some of the other lines that Data has just makes me feel like they're using a series 1/season 2 Data rather than the Data that has become become known to us over the last 7 years.
Yeah. I, when I got done with the episode and I was waiting for us to start recording, I kind of went for a little bit of inspiration from Memory Alpha. And I don't normally do that because I like to judge these based on my own observations instead of what people say about it. But there is a thing in there I will mention, that one of the things even Brent Spiner found it difficult to do because he had just got done filming Thine Own Self, and we all gave it fives. We knew that was good. It was the midnight before, and then the next morning he starts shooting this stuff and playing, you know, different characters. And so it was kind of difficult for him to come in with some kind of frame of mind about each character, so he just had to make it up as he went. I think it shows.
So I also think there are too many characters here, by the way. I think that there are like 4 that Data has that he goes through.
Yeah.
And then he has the Musaka character as well at the end. That's kind of like the finale. But I think there are too many because so as he shifts, which again, how does that happen? Why does he transform? he has like a name tag on his chest that often changes. But as that happens, I find it hard to follow as a viewer as to who is who and what is happening, and the fact that they all have such, I mean, I'm going to claim that they have such ludicrous names that I can't keep track of everyone. So yeah. You know, between Corgano and Ehad and Musaka and the rest of it, you know, they're trying to introduce you to like an extra like 5 or 6 characters that are all being portrayed by one person in a very similar setup, except his name tag changes every now and again, and they're not distinct enough in my mind for me to frankly be able to keep track, and also they're not interesting enough for me to keep track either. So I've really got. You know, this is that they're not distinct. They are. I mean, they're distinct to the extent that Brent Spiner is doing funny voices slightly differently for all of them. But I kind of feel that it's none of this none of this hooks me in. None of this like brings me in into the intrigue. It's all a bit of a what the hell's happening, rather than let me focus, let me stay interested in what is happening. It's much more of a I'm out. I've got no idea what this is attempting to do.
Yeah. Maybe if we watched a few more times. I just don't know if I feel like torturing myself that way. So Data's in the children's sculpture class. Okay, I can, you know, he's kind of kid-like in a way. And he makes up the little musical note, which, okay. I guess he could, but I think he could do better. And he did. No, he didn't. The mask was stupid. They used phasers to drill this comet's core. I have never seen a comet that just kind of disintegrated like that because it wasn't a comet. So what was it? Was it a hologram?
Well, no, it's supposed to be a comet, right? It's supposed to be a comet, but it's just that inside the comet there was this spaceship or this archive or however you want to frame it. But it feels like, you know, that needs a bit of energy to keep on going. How it's going on inside a comet for 87 million years, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. They also do this thing in this episode where they, you know, they find the comet. They think, well, the most important thing for the flagship of the Federation is to sit here for 79 hours, I think it was, to mm-hmm. perform a scan, a low-intensity scan. It's like, what? we honestly have nothing better to do. I also like at the beginning of this episode that, yeah, Troi goes into her, you know, before the teaser comes on, Troi goes into her quarters and she sees that someone's been in her quarters and has left her something. And then she's talking to Crusher and he says, oh, perhaps you have a secret admirer. And she goes, oh, that would be fun. But you say, okay, well, you think it's fun that a secret admirer is broken into your quarters and left stuff around. It's like, that's creepy, right? That's not fun.
No.
And then she like accuses Data of were you in my quarters? No. It's such a weird kind of setup that the Troi seems to be happy that someone's been in her quarters. It's just weird.
And she didn't even ask computer who accessed my quarters today. I'd love the computer to say no one. Well, now that would make the mystery a little bit deeper, but they didn't do that. They just left it as, oh, wow, how cute, and walked up.
And we always have a situation where, we're kind of like building up the tension, or we're building up the threat, I suppose, that that this thing is starting to, you know, drop various artifacts around the ship. They've also, you know, Data's able to understand the language. So there's a little bit of a mystery here, but there seems to be no urgency in sorting any of this out, right? So they melt down the comet. They find that inside there's this like, you know, high tech thing that, you know, for all they know, they could overpower the Enterprise, and or at least it's technologically advanced enough for it to be at least something you should be, you know, notable. And just very quickly, you get to the point of you get to the point that the crew is being stupid and they wait to be overwhelmed by the artifacts and they get wait to be overwhelmed before taking any action. And by the time they can take their action, it's too late, and we get the warning of, you know, Musaka is waking, kind of thing. I don't know I don't really know what we're supposed to take away from this other than what on earth is happening here.
I wish they would have awakened the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters. It would have been more fun. Tell me you've seen Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. Sometimes I think we're in such different cultures that there's no way you ever see anything that I've seen. It's amazing. Data suffering from multiple personality disorders. I don't know. I think what it comes down to is he just changes his voice, you know, and I don't think that's enough. Had they made him different, made his appearance different for each character, except for the, you know, the name tag, like you said, might have been better.
And actually, also the other thing is that I mean, even away from the story and, you know, the stupid story and the people doing stupid things, the way that this episode's executed in terms of the choices they make of how to film things, does makes it a little bit painful to watch, at least in my mind. So there's the scene in Main Engineering where Data's kind of jumping over, you know, jumping around the warp core as Picard is talking to him. Do you not find that, like, cringeworthy? It feels so over the top and embarrassing as to why they decided to, like, you know, film it that way. Why is Data standing on the warp core? He's like poncing around trying to be Q. It didn't fit right with me.
Well, it seemed to me when they came back from the commercial break, I thought, you know, it looked like Data was sitting on top of the dilithium chamber. And I thought, you know, that's kind of funny in a way. But, or not the commercial, I was a little into it actually. But yeah, I mean, him sitting on the dilithium chamber was a little bit funny. But other than that, the rest of it was just ridiculous. The 10 forward getting turned into, I don't know what. Little bamboo things on the ground and all these sculptures. The conference room turning into a swamp. The bridge being taken over. All these artifacts that just show up on the ship at random. I'm sure an archaeologist would love to have been on that ship at that time. Just go from room to room looking at all these little artifacts that kept popping up. So to me, it just made no sense. And then they're trying to do their dialogue like it actually means something about this society or this culture at one time. I just didn't feel like I cared about them. The Catan story, I don't know, what do you call them, Catanians, or what were they called? Yeah, their story was compelling. There was his wife, his daughter, his children, his son, his grandchildren, and their civilization that he grew up in so many years in the span of 40 minutes. That was compelling. This stuff here, trying to tell us a story, the whole story made no sense, as if they really didn't try very hard. Anyway.
Yep.
Okay, so I did talk about how 10 forward was changed. That was the emergency that was in 10 forward. The ship was being transformed a little at a time, but like I said, I wasn't sure exactly what it was being transformed into. A monument of some kind, or what? But
and certainly for what purpose, right? Well, what's the point? You know, what's the ultimate aim of this thing? And I think they even asked that question in the show, and it's like, well, we don't know. But okay, to say we don't know now, that's kind of fine. But I kind of expect them to know by the end of the episode, right? I would expect them to have sorted this stuff out and to have, you know, to know where to at least come up with some type of hypothesis as to this was an alien ship and they did this and they found that they've got this record, etc. Otherwise, it's just like, what? Why would anyone do this? And why would it behave this way? So, you know, we are required to believe that that the archive, I mean, is this by accident that it happened to proceed this way, or was this by design? And if it's by design, you kind of have to make sure that you run into a starship that has adequate resources and has specific resources for you to be able to change into what you want to change into. And frankly, you need to have an android on board in order to take these personalities. Because what happens if you run into this thing and you don't have Data? What does it still play out in the same way? Do you just get the bushes, but you don't get the story of Masaka and Cortana, Corgano, I should say. Mm-hmm. It all seems very very convenient that we had this story, and it's not It's not clear to me what the why would anyone have built this thing, and what are they expecting it to do?
Maybe it should have taken over Alexander instead. Well, that would have been interesting. I have all these voices come out of Alexander.
Yeah, maybe. I have to say that despite how much I love Data, I mean, they've just done two back-to-back Datas, right? With thine own self and then now this. We don't need this much Data. You know, last week, it was a good Data episode. This week, this doesn't need to be a Data story. You know, you're not, other than the fact that you can transform Data into whoever you like and have a connection with a probe, we're not learning anything about Data. None of this is specific to Data, right? In last week's episode, the thing about Data that you were able to use was, you know, his innocence, his thirst for good, for empirical, scientific discovery, stuff like that was you put Data into like almost a baby state where he's learning from the world around him. Whereas this episode, this isn't a Data story. You don't leave this episode feeling like you've learned anything about Data. And I think sometimes the TNG movies get too Data heavy for no reason. And this is certainly a case where I'd say less Data would probably make this episode better.
Yeah. Well, I think he did the best he could trying to play somebody with multiple personality disorders only hours into, learning the script. But he did the best he could. So they even think about trying to destroy the archive. We can manually launch a torpedo, if it wasn't filled with snakes. Where do the snakes fit into this whole story? And why were there so many kind of snakes?
And why are they snakes? I mean, it's kind of just a jump scare for the sake of it, right? Actually, to a large extent, one kind of bigger concern that I have with the episode is that you're very much leaning into a lot of human-centric iconography and stuff. There's no, you're trying to project some kind of, Aztec-like civilization, and the snakes and the sun worshiping and that kind of stuff. It all kind of leans into that a little bit too heavy, because at the end of the day, we're led to believe that this culture's main cycle is one of sun following moon following sun following moon, but that assumes that there is a moon on this planet, and that there's not more than one moon on this planet, and it just feels like it's I like it when Trek. I think at Trek, in order to work, it has to do with universal concepts. And I just don't think that, in my mind at least, the idea of the sun and the moon chasing each other is universal enough. We already know that Vulcan has no moon, but there's no reason for us to. There's no reason why the story of the sun and the moon should be so, universally transplantable to other cultures. Who's to say that there aren't planets out there that don't even have daylight? Day night cycle at all, and the fact that you've got human like or earth like snakes turned up as some type of deterrent it just seemed very cheap,
and it frightened Worf. Did you see him jump back?
I thought it frightened the Forge, but
it did, but he also took a step back Yeah, LaForge, faking the, oh my goodness, hand over the chest thing. But actually, Worf jerked back too. Wait a minute. No snake is going to be scaring a Klingon. I don't think so. But, okay. All right there. Let's see. What else did I miss, if anything? engineering turned into the like a swamp kind of thing, and but let's not forget the wall of fire they couldn't get past. Emergency beam out.
Yeah, and then you know, we're led to believe that the transformation is so bad in main engineering that they have to be emergency beamed out, but it's also not so bad that the warp core stays unbreached, and there's nothing wrong with the like the phaser banks or any other kind of power system that is going to blow up. It's a bit of a strange one, and what actually happens, by the way, I never quite catch this because by this point I'm kind of rolling in agony when I'm watching this episode, but what ends up, you know, the points that the plot points in the story is that Picard starts to think, well, let's try to solve this using the archaeological story or the myth that they're talking about. So he goes and he starts, he wants to replicate Musaka's temple. So he has to get the symbol for the temple. And as soon as he can find it, did they mention that, I've managed to isolate the transformation program? He said, well, as soon as you've isolated the transformation program, turn it off, stop it running. I would have thought that would have been a much better way forward, but they decide instead that they should transform a part of the Enterprise into the temple. It's also a good thing that when they pressed that button, they didn't themselves get transformed into the temple. It was happy to only transform from the surroundings and not Picard or indeed his tricorder or clothes. And then what happens in the end? In the end, it's Musaka comes along, refuses to talk to Picard, and then they run the transformation program again to get the Kogano headgear, and apparently that solves everything. Mm. I mean, what are we supposed to take away from this story? It's so odd, right? Am I missing something here?
No, you're really not. Like I said, it was cringeworthy. It was boring. Anyway. Yeah. Maybe they were just kind of chilling out for next week's episode. Yeah. Let's save the good stuff for that one. Because I think they did save the good stuff for that one. I don't know about you, but it's Eye of the Beholder, if you're wondering.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually not too hot on that episode either.
Oh, wow. I think next week will be interesting then for us. Because I love mysteries like that. This mystery like this is terrible. But, if I'm thinking Eye of the Beholder, if I remember which one it is, we're going all the way back to the creation of the Enterprise.
We are.
So I like that. There's one in Voyager that does the same thing where we're in dry dock and,
Blimey, it's exactly the same, isn't it?
It is pretty much almost, yeah, it's very much.
Yeah.
So. Where did the bomb get planted? But this is, it's a little different. This is a murder mystery. But, I liked it. I don't know. So it's going to be interesting next week to talk about this.
Well, so the problem with Eye of the Beholder is that it's a Troy-centered episode. And I just think, the last time I watched it, I was probably... I probably didn't particularly watch it that enthusiastically on the back of it being a Troy episode.
How long ago was that?
It must be a decade ago.
I'm not so sure. I got a feeling since we've done this run here that you're right. Some Troy episodes are really ridiculous, but I think for this to work, you have to have an empath who can see these things and can explain why she's seeing these things. And no, I think I don't know. I you know, well, let's save this for next week. We'll talk. But I guess this is kind of like our initial thought. My initial thought is you need an empath for these kind of flashbacks to make any sense. You're not a Troy lover, but
well,
I'm not either, really.
Okay, I won't comment on that. I think I've got a lot. I've enjoyed Troy's character, and performances a lot more, like, you know, as we've gone through the series and as we've watched it, and as I've probably watched it more in a more focused way, it's been something that's been much nicer than I remember, you know, going back. I mean, it might not even be 10 years, frankly. It could be like 15 years or so. I do recall watching all of the TNG when they came out on DVD, and that would have been probably in 2005-ish, something like that. So I was a student. I had a lot of time on my hand. Mm-hmm. It would have been earlier than 2005, but like 2003, something like that. That's when I was a student. I graduated in 2005. And I had to start work.
2005. Oh, man. All right, 2005.
Yeah, just one final criticism of the last scene, right? Because we have this, Masaka tells Picard, "Go away, I'm not going to talk to you," which is, you know, good, I suppose. It's very direct. But then we have this like final confrontation scene, right? Which I don't feel like. I'm not watching the final confrontation thinking, oh, I wonder what happens here. And or even things like, I know what's going to happen. You know, I know that Picard knows what to do. Because as they mentioned, look, you don't know anything about this Korgana. You don't know anything about this culture. You don't know anything about anything at all. What exactly do you think you're going to do with Data? And the best they can do is they can just shrug it off and say, well, you know, this might be similar to other cultures I'm more familiar with. Okay, fine. I'll give you that for a second. But they go downstairs and they go to the temple room where, Musaka's sitting there. And I think it's literally, what was it, like 7 seconds of dialogue and it all gets reversed. And it's like, well, first of all, you know, you just go up to Musaka and go, you're a bit tired, aren't you? Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go to sleep. Kind of sleep.
I mean, it's like, where did that come from? And then they mentioned that, well, are we going to be any better under this Korgana guy? But why does the act of going through this, of getting Musaka to kind of leave, why does this mean that the entirety of the Enterprise and the shapeshifting that gets done, why does that get undone? It just seems like they needed to hit the reset button in like 12 seconds. And that's all, that's the only time they had. So I'm left thinking, what on earth has gone on here? I have no idea why. You know, why did they leave? Why was the chat enough to satisfy, you know, the demands or what the demands even were? It doesn't follow. There's no narrative. There's no structure here that I've been able to latch onto that makes me engaged in the story.
Yeah. Okay.
Are we thinking about this too hard?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. Certainly been talking about it longer than I thought we would. So
ratings.
I was going to say DS9. Should we make it a half hour show? We don't know how to do that. Okay. Well, then I guess, unless you have anything else on this?
No.
All right, then. Then it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 2, with 1 being the worst and 2 being totally incomprehensible. James, we'll start with you.
No, this is a 1-star episode. I have no qualms whatsoever. I watched this episode. It's hard to follow what's going on. It's hard to stand in Picard's shoes to think he's trying to do something reasonable. I've got no idea at the end here why it all reverts. I have no idea what the point of, you know, I have no idea what the point of the story is within the Next Generation show. I have no idea what the point of the probe is within the Star Trek universe. It just feels like it's like inexplicable. what on earth happened here? So I'm happy to move on. 1 out of 5. Certainly the worst episode in TNG for quite a while. Well, I mean, it's probably my lowest since something like, you know, violations or something like that.
Yeah, this liaisons. What's your last one?
This one's worse than liaisons.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. And you don't do points, so I guess you can't say 0.5. Although, yeah, okay. I still remember there was one episode you gave it like a 25 or something. Anyway, same here, one. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about this dog. It's one of the worst ones to review. And like I said, it was tough for an ADD person to sit there and watch it. I don't know. Yeah, it was like a bad reproduction of the Inner Light. So, yeah, let's go. So, anyway. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's sad that we don't really get the feedback that other podcasts get. You know, people, even when we had forums, other than Karen McDuff, I really don't recall really getting much feedback. Because I'd like to hear people tell me, well, why do they like this episode? What is it that we're wrong about? And that's the type of stuff I would read on the next one. Or somewhere in the future. But, all right. Anyway, if you want to, lewtrekshaw@gmail.com. All right, so everybody, thank you for downloading. And if you actually listened, you're better than we are. Good job, because you did it voluntarily. So, anyway, anything else you want to talk about, James?
No, I think we are good for tonight.
Okay, it's not even 10 o'clock your time, so you get to go to bed early tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody. Well, join us next time as we review episode number 18, Eye of the Beholder. And I got a feeling, like we just indicated, this episode is going to be in the Eye of the Beholder. So everyone, take care and good night.
Good night.
Cool enough. Stop the recording.
So is this worse than Sub Rosa? I think it is. I'm it absolutely is.